This is the fourth chapter of part one, Literary Movements. Name of the chapter, Neoclassicism. In the history of English literature, the period spanning from the restoration of monarchy in 1660 to the outbreak of the French Revolution or the publication of the Lyrical Ballads in 1798 is called the Neoclassical Age. But the determination of this period is not without dispute. We come across a difference of opinions among critics. Saintsbury, sometimes applied to the whole period during which Pope wrote, sometimes limited to the reign of Queen Anne, and sometimes extended backwards to include Dryden. But broadly speaking, the Neoclassical Age stretches the whole period from 1660 to 1798, including four ages. Number 1, the Age of Dryden, 1660 to 1700. Number 2, the Age of Pope, 1700 to 1744. Number 3, the Age of Johnson, 1744 to 1784. Number 4, the Age of Transition, 1784 to 1798. Thus, the general traits of the Neoclassical Age originate in the Restoration, which continue, accentuate, and also in reaction modify. However, Kazamian states, the literary career of Pope forms the axis of this age. Politically, the Neoclassical Age covers the periods of the Restoration, Queen Anne, George I, George II, George III, and the French Revolution. The Neoclassical Age is called the Augustan Age because it is compared to the reign of the Roman Emperor Augustus Caesar, 31 BC to 14 AD. His regime marks the culmination of the Roman civilization, enjoying its heyday in every sphere of life, politics, science, commerce, trade, literature, music, painting, etc. It is an age of peace, security, prosperity, and happiness. Roman literature touches the zenith of glory, producing Horace, Virgil, Ovid, and Cicero. In England, the neoclassical writers Dryden, Pope, Johnson, Swift, Addison, Steele, and Burke identify themselves with the Roman writers on the ground that the English society, except a few calamities and upheavals, witnesses prosperity, stability, peace, and happiness, and above all, they think that they follow correctly the rules and principles of the classical Roman writers. And they assume the quality of their work as that of the Romans. But this assumption is absolutely wrong. The neoclassicists lack the spontaneity, harmony, warmth, and the universality of the classical writers. Unable to imbibe the spirit, they imitate only the form and manners outright. Thus, their literature becomes artificial and consequently is called the pseudo-classical or neoclassical. It cannot be called classical. To understand the tone and temper of the neoclassical literature, it is essential to have the knowledge of the social conditions and the prevailing mood or attitude of the Augustan age. This is an age of political controversy and strife between Whigs and Tories. The Revolution of 1688 brings the constitutional monarchy and parliamentary democracy, placing the power and influence into the hands of politicians who become the source of all patronage. The writers associated with the political parties waste their creative energy in writing journalistic and polemical pamphlets and satire. Real earnestness, strong passion, and creative impulse ebb away Puritanism, religious fanatism, moderation, and decency are thrown into the wind, and profligacy and infidelity, hypocrisy and corruption, the lowering of moral strength and the lack of spiritual fervor are rampant. The healthy political nexus between France and England leaves a deep and direct imprint on English literature. With his return from France to England, Charles II brings a trait of French culture, taste, fashion, courtly manners, glamour, and above all, French ideas of art, and tried to imbue England with them. The contemporary literature of France was marked with lucidity, vivacity, a close attention given to form, correctness, intellectual exercise, elegance, and finish. French dramatists and poets like Beaulieu, Rapin, and Corneille Perry, Corneille Perry, were stuck to the rigid literary canons evolved by the French Academy. It was essentially a literature of polite society with its merits and limitations. This social, political, and literary ethos permeates the whole of English society, and English writers are guided by it. Therefore, the neoclassical literature, according to Hudson, is more Latin than Greek and more French than Latin. In addition to the admiration for Latin classics and the French imitation, the emergence of the middle class, the city of London with its coffee houses and hotels, the new philosophies of Locke, L-O-C-K-E, and Hobbes, H-O-B-B-E-S, the growth of scientific temper with its critical and analytical approach, they all are conducive to foster the spirit of neoclassicism in England. Chief characteristics of neoclassical school of poetry. The neoclassical poetry is an outcry against the Elizabethan exuberance and the fantastic imagery and conceit of the metaphysicals. The poets embrace a strong traditionalism, denying any kind of radical innovation. The concept of the neoclassical man is entirely different from that of the Renaissance man. He is considered to be a limited being, and he has to think and do within the fixed parameter, avoiding extremes and following the golden mean. Most of the writers mock at human pride or his presumption beyond the natural order. In art, as in life, man, an integrated part of organized society, becomes the primary source of poetic subject matter. Abrams writes, "Not art for art's sake, but art for man's sake was the ideal of neoclassical humanism." The poets deal with the general characteristics of human being, his normal experiences, universal truth, common ideas, thoughts, feelings, and tastes shared by a huge mass of society. It is not a poetry of the individual, but of man in general. Pope's much quoted lines are, "True wit is nature to advantage dressed, what oft was thought, but never so well expressed." The Augustans have developed a catchword, "Be correct." Correctness has many connotations. The significant aspect is the correct observance of rules and regulations of composition and check lawlessness and inspired frenzy. According to Albert, correctness means avoidance of enthusiasm, moderate opinions, moderately expressed, strict care and accuracy in poetical technique, and humble imitation of the style of the Latin classics. On the other hand, Professor Dobry holds in the case of Pope, correctness meant the passionate search for the triumphant finding of the exact words, rhythms, novel sound, diction, texture. In the poetry, the rules demand restraint, order, polish, and rationality, while in the drama, the observance of the three unities, the unity of time, place, and action. In spite of all, the dictum correctness kills the spirit of poetry. The neoclassical age is also called the age of reason or good sense. It is because in this age it is assumed that in reasoning power all men are equal, and the modern discoveries were based on observation and reason. In the universe, everything is found in order and harmony and works on rational principle. So, in poetry, good sense means sound judgment, common sense, critical analysis, and direct appeal to the head or the mind. Hudson remarks, good sense meant a love of the reasonable and the useful, and the hatred of the extravagant, the mystical, and the visionary. The neoclassicists seek to control excess and maintain and uphold order and moderation. The invention, passion, curiosity, adventurousness, and experimental effort, which had once been taken for granted as the essence of poetry, are broken out with explosive violence and looked as the wildness of disordered mind. The neoclassicists are opposed to excessive emotionalism, sentimentalism, imagination, inspiration, enthusiasm, extravagance, eccentricities, and romantic fervor, which are the hallmarks of the literature of the Elizabethan age. The Elizabethans also study extensively the ancient Greek and Roman masters and even borrow freely and happily, but never copy them. And rather, they mold and assimilate the works of the classical authors according to their own wills. Therefore, there is a harmony between form and substance in the Elizabethan writings. On the other hand, the Augustans imitate the ancients correctly and follow strictly the rules laid down by them, disturbing the harmony. They adhere only to forms, while the subject matter always remains the life of their time. They sacrifice thought for the sake of form and poetry, degenerated into a mere mechanical art. The Augustans despise spontaneity, passion, simplicity, mystery, and creative energy. The individual whims and fancies are carefully ruled out of the neoclassical poetry. As a result, the literature of this age becomes artificial, stilted, rational, intellectual, and didactic. Poetry becomes a piece of argument and criticism for politics and personalities. Naturally, they have no regard for the great poets of human arts, Chaucer, Shakespeare, and Milton. They have no enthusiasm for the Middle Ages and their tales of chivalry, adventure, and visionary idealism. Spencer, therefore, does not find favor with them. Hudson says that the poet did not allow his thoughts to wander off with Spencer into fairyland or to explore with Milton the mysteries of heaven and hell. Therefore, lyric poetry declines steadily in the neoclassical age till it is reinvigorated by Gray, Collins, and Burns. Whatever else the poets of Pope's age could do, they could not sing. They nourish satire but starve lyric and song. The neoclassical poetry is characterized by formal perfection, accuracy, exactness, formalism, precision, mathematical elegance, smoothness in form, and chiseled style. The poets are fastidious craftsmen and polish and repolish what they write until they are fully satisfied and try to say what they have to say in the fewest possible as well as best possible words. They strive for flawless form and expression. Pope writes in an essay on criticism, "True ease in writing comes from art, not chance, as those move easiest who have learned to dance." Further in his essay on man, he perceives and follows his canons that all nature is a concealed art. All nature is but art unknown to thee. Therefore, he goes on refining his language until lines polished like marbles. Hazlitt terms Pope as the poet not of nature but of art because he has a meticulous sense of the exact word in the exact place. The neoclassicists are fond of circumlocution, personified abstractions, periphrasis, and Latinism. Their excessive care for refinement and superficial polish make poetic diction highly stereotyped, artificial, and pompous. It is reduced to a mere formula lacking sincerity, warmth of feelings, and incapable to express deepest emotions forcefully. Simplicity, naturalness, and directness are replaced by the growth of a false conception of refinement. The language of poetry is cut off from everyday use. Even the most commonplace things are treated in a gaudy and roundabout way. For instance, birds become the feathery people, the sheep woolly flock, the fish finny tribe, and the cup as China earth. Similarly, the shepherd or lover becomes the swain, and the beloved the nymph. NYMPH. A boot is called the shining leather that enclosed the limb. According to the Augustans, the language of poetry is different from that of prose. They rigorously avoid all that is coarse, vulgar, and low, and hence arises conscious and sedulous sophistication of language. They depict imagery and choose vocabulary quite distinct from those commonly used in everyday conversation. So, the finish of poetic diction is cold glitter without any tinge of suggestiveness. The chief genre of the Augustan poetry is satire, which is a useful and right weapon to lash the contemporary society branded with shallowness, infidelity, vanity, and corruption. The mock heroic narrative is a subtype and vehicle for satire through which the writers made a true depiction of the age with its manners and morals, vices and trivialities. It was an era of coffee and snuff, powder and perfume, wigs and fans, opera and game. Having a sense of keen observation to the realities of life, the poets focused their attention to the people of London, and in London too, confined only to the sophisticated upper class gentry, high political and courtly circles, fashionable lords, and gay ladies. It is the poetry of coffee houses, hotels, and drawing rooms exposing and satirizing human foibles and frailties, fickleness and narrowness, shams and cants. The poets are inspired not by any deep philosophy. The meaning of poetry is not the surface, and there is nothing that requires deep study and variety of interpretation. Dryden, Pope, Addison, Johnson, Defoe are the most brilliant among the satirists of this period. Pope's Rape of the Lock, a milestone in the history of English satire, mirrors the frivolity and gaiety of the woman of the time. The poem is glittering with the beauty and fashion and dresses and cosmetics of Belinda, a bewitching society lady who, with her snobbery, represents the contemporary English woman. Keeping this lady in view, Pope makes a very acrid generalized remark. Men, some to business, some to pleasure take, but every woman is at heart a rake. And all women are frivolous, and their real interest is lovemaking. However, the realistic representation of the Augustan literature is not extensive and panoramic, but limited. The poets are devoid of a sympathy for the humble humanity and for lower creatures, the life of villagers and cottagers, and love for nature, the beautiful flowers, the song of birds and landscape, as we find in the romantic poetry, but they are concerned with the glamour, razzle and dazzle, and outward dignities and the senses of the metropolis. The Augustans use many verse forms, but their characteristic measure is the heroic couplet, two iambic pentameter lines rhyming together. It is the fittest form to couch their hard intellectuality and sparkling wit. The pseudo-classical couplet is closed couplet in which the sense ends with an each couplet rather than the run on in which the sense runs on from one couplet to another. This was led by Edmund Waller and Sir John Denham and perfected via Dryden in the hands of Pope. He uses it with superb dexterity, variation of speed and delicacy of touch, and makes his couplet epigrammatic and thus memorable, such as A little knowledge is a dangerous thing. B. The proper study of mankind is man. C. Fools rush in where angels fear to tread. Heroic couplet imposed restraint on poetic exuberance, for blank verse was considered too formless for the social poetry of this age. It gave two unique qualities to the 18th century poetry: antithesis and parallels. The heroic couplet persists beyond the great Augustans in Dr. Johnson's London and The Vanity of Human Wishes, and in Oliver Goldsmith's The Traveller and the Deserted Village. But in the long run, this poetic form was bound to grow monotonous and disagreeable and was unable to hold deep passion and strong imagination. To sum up, the neoclassical literature is the product of reason and intelligence, wit and fancy, intellect and rationalism, and dry logicism. It is commonly critical, didactic, and satirical. It is also characterized by formality, correctness, accuracy, and elegance of expression. They pay all their attention to set rules and regulations, custom and form, precision and exactness. They believe in respectability and design conformity. Importance is attached to reason in modes of thinking and expressing. Reason is interpreted as good sense. Thus, the whole literature is marked by coldness and want of feeling. Thus, this chapter is now over.